excessive spending and ethical violations served to further distract the agency.
Speaking on CNN's State of the Union, Collins said on policy grounds, she believes Pruitt is the wrong person to lead the EPA, as she was the only Republican to vote against his confirmation last year. Florida's Republican governor is expected to announce a U.S. Senate bid today. Rick Scott would face a GOP primary, as will the incumbent Democrat who holds that Senate seat, Bill Nelson. Dozens of students are injured after a bus hits an overpass on New York's Long Island last night. And this is USA Radio News.
There's a price war in the insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call the Term Lifeline right now and see if you can save 40%. $500,000 plans and up, that's our specialty. Even great smokers' rates. Protect your family today. Call the Term Lifeline right now for a free quote. 866-509-TERM. 866-509-TERM. 866-509-TERM.
For the second time, the lawyer for Stormy Daniels is trying to depose President Trump about a $130,000 so-called hush money payment that his client allegedly received not to discuss an affair. That reported payment coming before the 2016 election, years after the tryst in question. Now, the motion filed in federal court in California Sunday is the lawyer's second attempt. A previous motion was stopped by a judge because of a legal paperwork technicality. Walmart planning to launch a global money transfer service called Walmart 2 World. It's in partnership with MoneyGram International. The new service will allow customers to transfer funds to people in more than 200 countries. Walmart already offers a domestic money transfer service for funds up to $2,500. Walmart 2 World will charge flat fees based on the amount of money being sent, and it promises delivery of the funds within 10 minutes or less. The service is scheduled to roll out later this month. And there's a new wearer of the green jacket in pro golf.
Captain America captures Augusta.
Golfer Patrick Reed, the winner of the 2018 Masters Tournament, as he carded a 71 on the final day to finish 15 under par at Augusta, and he'll take home his first career major title. Ricky Fowler finishing one shot back in second, and Jordan Spieth shot a final round 64 to end up in third place. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Hey, Pat, did you know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Hunterton Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Steve and Patrick. Home sweet
home.
I seen your picture.
Hello, welcome to HuntertonChamberRadio.com. WHCRDB, Chef Bill's Table here. Coming to you on Mondays live. We have live video stream today, thanks to Chris Bianco. So through Facebook, your Facebook page, you can see who's here. I've got a couple of fine gentlemen here. Scott Catania from Old Wick General Store. And Pete Nurcio from Old Wick Spice.
Yeah, Black River Spice.
Black River, I'm sorry. In Old Wick.
In Old Wick.
Yeah. So, brought the guys together today. Well, you know, just to find a little about Scott. The General Store was Scott was a very acclaimed chef in New Jersey and done TV spots for Fox. It was Scott. And now he's in a general store. So it seemed kind of interesting that the chef, with his background, would all of a sudden go into a general store. But we're going to get Scott here. And, Scott, why don't you tell us a little bit about your history and how you got to where you are today.
Hey, Bill. Hey, guys. Hey. I had a restaurant for 15 years in Burnsville, Le Petit Chateau. I wanted to move on to different things. I merged and did another restaurant and then moved on from that. My goal was to go into the city and partner with Terrence Brennan at Picheline and Artisanal. But at the time, I was a single parent. So when I was looking for different places in New Jersey, a friend of mine took me to the Olwick General Store, and I was thinking to myself, why am I here? But when I went home, I thought it was a fabulous schedule, certainly because at the time, I was the main caretaker for my son.
So it was lifestyle change, really, that prompted you to get out? I mean, it's a high-pressure business, the four-star dining.
I'll tell you this. I've never worked harder in my life than having the Olwick General Store.
Really?
Yeah, it's a lot of moving parts, big operation, you know, and I'm more frenetic, intense, you know, creating, and I'm always in the past behind the scenes unless I go out to the table, you know, of course, to find out if they're happy or what have you. So that kind of intensity is... I have to always curb it and make sure that, you know, I don't scare people because, you know, I'm always, I get excited when I'm, you know, cooking.
Well, you want to make sure it's right.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we only get the bad news in the back.
Right.
You know, in the kitchen. Once in a while, you get a compliment, but most of the time, you don't get that many, but you tend to focus on complaints.
Right. And you're only as good as your last plate, whether it's making a Reuben or a dish of foie gras. You know, and I mean, in this business, the goal is to see a smile on their face. So whether you're cooking for a child or a CEO of a major corporation, if you see a smile on their face, you've achieved the ultimate goal, which is pleasing them. In this business, I'm a servant. I'm there to serve people. I want to make them happy. I choose to do this. I went to Boston University for business and graduated in 2.5 years, yet I choose to do this because it's what makes me feel like I've never worked a day in my life.
So, yeah, how did you get into the food then? If you were, I mean, business naturally helps you.
Right. You know, as at a young age, just getting, you know, after school jobs, there was a restaurant down the block that I would work on weekends, just, you know, cleaning dishes. And it was just, you know, to get, you know, some kind of money, pocket money. And, you know, I constantly tried to learn more what the cooks were doing, and it wasn't like a goal. It was fun being there, exciting. And, you know, you get that dopamine when you're creating something, and it's just like a feeling that you always want to chase.
Well, you get that little taste of the nightlife.
Right.
At that age, that's exciting. That's how I got into it. I was in a band, and then all of a sudden, you know, I need a paycheck. I can't just do this, you know, random music stuff, and took it to dishwashing. And you get the bug.
Yeah, that's what it is.
You see what the guys are doing. Like, well, how do you do that? How do you do that? You know, and did you cook at home when you were a youngster?
You know what? Honestly, I really didn't. My mom's from Ireland, and my dad is Italian-American, grew up in Brooklyn. So his mom was a really good cook. So, you know, the grandmother, in my opinion, brings the family together, like the matriarch of the family.
Yes.
Where every Sunday, everyone was there.
I was going to ask you, you had Sunday gravy, right?
Yeah, it was really neat. You know, I grew up in Staten Island, and we would drive into Brooklyn every Sunday for dinner. And just that whole feeling of closeness and family, where the common denominator was food. And she would, you know, make things where as you got older, you really fell in love with it. Like for me, Struffles was the number one dish, the Italian honey balls.
Yeah, the Struffle. Yeah, it's a lot of work.
It is. And my grandmother would make a plate for each family. But I was such a nag that eventually at 11, I had my own plate. Plus the family had theirs. But she didn't do it for any of the grandchildren.
No. Okay.
I mean, and...
So you had a good food memories, but so your training was not formal, or did you just...
Oh, it was. I I was Daniel's top chef in New York City. At that time, he was number one in the United States, fourth in the world. I worked as the pastry chef for Michel Girard in the southwest of France. He's the longest-running three-star Michelin chef in the world. I was Garmager chef for the Ritz in Paris, which is the number one hotel in the world.
So you had some good mentors and been in some great environments then.
Yeah, because I didn't care about the money. I just wanted to learn.
So you learned classical cooking through just working.
Right. And, you know, just going home, writing everything, going back the next day, finding out different answers that you really didn't get initially, and then rewriting it neatly for your own recipe book, if you want to call it.
Yeah, so you took notes. So, and you find you were mentored well, so I'm sure, obviously, you try to do that with young people that come to work for you?
Or? Yeah, you know, with the Olwick General Store, like this whole new workforce, it's very different. You know, and in any business, you're only as strong as your weakest link. So it's hard to get people, you know, it's more difficult to get people to do this kind of work as it's not as specialized. I mean, it's very gratifying. But, you know, with the inception of the Food Network and as it continually grows, a lot of people interested in cooking want to go work for the big houses, the big restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as glamorous as it looks, I could tell you.
Well, there's always the trenches there. I mean, it doesn't matter if, you know, fancy or not. There's still basic work. I say every soup starts with an onion. You got to still learn how to chop an onion.
Right. Yes. You know? That's a good point.
So, yeah, I've seen this. Well, you're in that thing I see with the trend of joining of retail and restaurant now. A lot of restaurants have retail products.
Right.
And stores are putting restaurants in the stores. You're kind of both, right, at the general store?
A couple of years ago, we opened up a concept called 57 Main. It was a Tuesday through Saturday night restaurant. Got great reviews from the Star Ledger and so on, and a lot of that's on Yelp. And I thought I had sold the store. It was very serious where it was a done deal just because I had another opportunity. Excuse me. And it fell through, but I had closed the restaurant, and it was a lot of work because the facilities at the general store are not conducive to try to do, you know, four-star food. So when we went back in, people were constantly asking when the restaurant was going to reopen, and it wasn't, you know, I wasn't excited about it as it was a lot of work, and I just don't want to open something to do it. So I said, okay, parties of eight or more, I'll open any night of the week. And the beauty about that is I meet with the guest a week in advance. It's a three-course price fix, $65 plus plus. I give a choice of three courses per. And I ask them, what would you like as the appetizers? So, for example, if they said foie gras, octopus, tuna tartare, then I would put them on the apps. And I would just put the starch and veg according to the season.
Okay.
And we would print, personalize the menu, no charge for the room. So I think it's a great value. And, you know, we do two or three parties a month, you know.
And you don't have to, there's no cost to open unless you know you're going to do business, so.
Well, you know what? My wife and I do a lot of the work, and we have a couple of helpers, but there's no cost at all to open. And we have a good idea as to what kind of food and preparation we need to do because it's hard when I was open to use any other food items from the restaurant in the general store because quite a few items will really cook a la minute, meaning we cooked it at that time.
So you don't just offer the general stores like it's kind of a delicatessen type?
Oh, no, no. It was a French restaurant. We got unbelievable reviews with the Star Ledger.
Oh, so you never operated the store really as a retail market then?
Oh, no. During the day, it's retail.
During the day. So instead, you didn't just take the daytime stuff and put it on tables at night. You did new thing.
Yeah, it's mutually exclusive. The staff has nothing to do with the evening during the day.
Wow, it's two operations at once.
Exactly. And it was very taxing on us as far as, you know, resting and what have you. So that's why, in a way, I was excited that we didn't reopen it. But it seems to work out better now because I need to have all my focus at the general store. Because for me, it's still a big learning curve.
Right.
You know, you want to, you know, do your best. And we're constantly trying to define what that is as far as a retail, bakery, deli, grill, restaurant.
Okay, so that's different. Pete, how do you know Scott?
Well, the general store is not too far from where our operation is. And so I've stopped in quite often to get grab lunch or in breakfast sometimes on a Saturday or Sunday occasionally.
Yeah, so do you see – I know in our restaurant, I'm at Jake's here in Flemington, we've seen a big uptick in takeout food. One of my students works at Frenchtown Inn, and even there, he said they had to start buying containers. He said all of a sudden people want, you know, the nice food, not just burgers and pizzas. Do you get requests like that for the dining, like the finer dining items that people would?
It's not so much. If I do, it'll be for a couple, for a few different plates off the menu. And when we were open all the time, we had that more often. But it's hard to push that when you don't have the food prepared.
Yeah, you're just customizing for 8 or 20 people or whatever, and
correct.
That's it. I mean,
right.
It's very efficient for you because you just buy that much food. Well, and
right.
Don't mess up, though, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, there's
don't
no option.
Burn the chicken.
And you know, with restaurants, you know, for me, 5% is cooking and the food. You got to thrive to be 5 out of 5. There's no option, but the other 95% has nothing to do with the food, as you know. You know, it's service, which is paramount for me in the restaurant business, more than the food. You know, and then a lot of different variables that are foreseen and unforeseen. So, I mean, trying to be 5 out of 5, it has to come with passion. It's not a job or it's not glamorous because I saw it on TV. So there's a lot of different aspects running a successful operation. And even then, I mean, there's major case studies that famous chefs and restaurateurs have opened restaurants and they failed within the first or 2 years. It's just a certain X factor that is hard to quantify. So the passion is key, though. It's the foundation.
I always said when I went to Jake's, I stopped cooking for my ego and started cooking for my family.
Right.
And that's
yeah.
when you mature and realize it's not about you. It's
You're
about
right.
the guest. We're going to take a quick break here. Got a pair of bills here, so
yes.
We'll be back in a couple of minutes at Chef Bill's table.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908 713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Back at the table here, it's Chef Bill's table at WHCRDB. Scott and Pete, just on the break, just discussing. I was going to ask Scott the sort of touch on how similar the business is, the retail or the restaurant, from the standpoint of service. It's not just about the product; it's the whole service delivery. So what's so that's the similarity between the two, would you say? I mean, it's like you're used to, you know, a whole different style of dining, and now it's people taking grab and go.
Yeah, but as you said, the service is paramount, you know, which is more difficult now to get people, you know, to work in a concept like that opposed to, you know, a four-star restaurant. But, you know, we're always thriving to make sure that, you know, the staff is attentive, they're there, they're sharp, they can multitask, and they understand that they need to be confident in the fact that they're there to serving, and that's why they're in that business. I mean, if you go into the restaurant business because you want to make money, it'll never happen.
I tell people it's cash flow and lifestyle.
Yeah.
It's not profit.
It's not. I always tell my staff, you worry about money, you'll never have it. You worry about being the best, you'll have as much as you want, and the only trade-off is how much time you want to steal away from your family, because to be successful, you need to be a little selfish.
Yeah, that's a tough balancing. And you as a single parent, I mean that's part of the reason I started. I was, you know, in the 80s, you know, the high-end Italian and did all that. And
sure.
90, you know, we saw that the casualization, let's say, but not necessarily cheapening. So you bring four-star food, but you're putting it maybe on a paper plate,
right,
or you're wrapping it up to go. And that's the trend. You see, I mean, what do the chefs do now? They're all opening burger joints and food,
right,
trucks. And,
yeah,
you know, that seems to be just take all the bells and whistles out of the pomp and circumstance, I guess, right?
Right,
of dining, and just say, yeah, this is a great sandwich or it's a great salad. And even if you're eating out of a paper cup. So what do you think about that, Pete?
Well, I can't say that I know a lot about the trend in dining, but I could see that would definitely appeal to people who are more cost conscious and just want to try to get the best food they can for the, yeah, best price they can. You know, that,
not necessarily even. I mean, sometimes you can charge for the right things, but you got to make sure it's right. And I guess I always envied the QSRs because they only have four things to worry about. It's got to be consistent, hot, fresh, and clean. You know, but four-star dining, you've got to do, you got to have the flowers, and nobody can wear a strong perfume. You get down to these little,
sure,
nuances that you wouldn't think would affect the experience, but it does. You have many more things on your punch list to take care of and manage every day. So, if you weren't a chef, what would you do?
I like to be on my feet. I like multitasking. I've been told I'm good at that, and I think I am. Like, I could do a lot of different things at once. I don't know. I mean, I'd love to say to be a lawyer, but I don't know if I can get through law school, you know, because I took law at BU.
Okay.
And every answer seemed to be the same. You know, it's just all about argue when you point. It's like psychology. They all look good.
Yeah, I would say if you didn't have to worry about paying bills, what would you do?
Yeah. I love what I do.
Really? You'd still... Food is it, right?
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
That's your hobby or...
Yeah, just...
Vocation, your avocation.
And I love wine, too.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
I'm a big wine restaurant, so, you know, that's something that I miss. But now we let people try to, you know, promote the fact that they can come in and bring their own wine. It just, you know, it'll take time, you know, because...
So you weren't BYOB before?
Oh, we're always BYOB, but people are not coming in at lunch, you know, to get a burger and bring a bottle of wine, and, you know? But they should, right? I mean, if this was in Europe, that's all they would bring.
Well, it's become more of a beverage now. Wine is finally, you know, hitting its stride. Is not just this occasion and all, again, ceremony.
Right.
Good wines now twist off caps.
Right.
Do you need the fancy glass? No. You've got a tumbler. I mean, and, you know, we've been in Europe, and that's how a lot of it's consumed. And I think we have to take that mystique out of things and get people. It's not just for an occasion. It's for just simple every day.
It's for a meal.
That's a great point.
Yeah. That's how I grew up.
Yeah.
We used to have wine on the table all the time.
I think that with this, what I call the casualization of it, it's just, you know, I know that there's always going to be room for some top fine dining when you want to celebrate, but since people are, I mean, eating out now or not preparing food at home, let's say, is becoming the norm. Look at all these meal solutions, meal kits, and you know, food, you got cooking classes and more cookbooks out there. Yeah, nobody's cooking. I look at our takeout window, like, who's cooking?
It's true.
You know, I see the grocery stores are busy, but who's cooking? They're all taking food to go.
It's like people collect cookbooks. I mean, they're pretty. But I agree with you on that.
I have a ton of them. And I'm into more of the history things now.
Sure.
Like, I'm finding in anything now, I'd like to know how things happened, why they happened, rather than, all right, this is where we are. To explore the past. So,
sure.
What do you like to cook? What's your favorite thing to cook?
You know, I mean, in general, whatever's seasonal. But because I love food, you know, if it's a good product, I love nurturing that product to be the best that it can be and not masking it with different sauces or what have you. But I believe a good chef could accentuate the benefit of the food and the flavors instead of masking it. So less is more. And simplicity for me is the hardest thing to achieve because you can add two or three items to a main protein and make it taste unbelievable where you can't distinguish what's in it, opposed to 20 different items where it just tastes, is that chicken kind of concept? You know, there's too many things.
Well, everybody says other proteins taste like chicken probably because of that. It's not like veal. It's not the veal, it's the sauce.
Right.
You know, veal doesn't have any flavor. Well, no, it does if you buy good veal.
Right.
And you don't mess with it too much. Yeah, I always thought, I tell people, like students even, if the simpler the ingredient, the more technique matters.
I agree.
You know, cooking eggs. I did a show a couple of weeks ago on cooking eggs. And everybody says, oh, how can you screw up an egg? Let me count the ways. There's a lot of bad cooking out there.
Listen, when I started there, I screwed up quite a few eggs, you know.
Yeah. Well, the French revere the eggs. You know?
Yeah.
So there's, in La Rousse, there's pages of egg recipes, but it's all about technique.
I was just wondering, because the two most biggest cuisines are going to be French and Italian, and both of them do use sauce. So you like simplicity. Does that mean that you don't prefer to cook with these classical type of sauces? Or?
Well, look, like the classic French, you know, with the creams and the butters, the thick...
The roux.
Additives, yeah. That's, for me, that's the French tradition.
Well, Escoffier, that was tradition. And then when Nouvelle Cuisine hit, which was misinterpreted, especially in America.
It was.
But that was about taking that long, heavy techniques. I mean, techniques are always good. The techniques still stand, but just now things are lighter.
Yeah, more concentration.
Reductions instead of thickening something up.
Right.
But you still, when you get that background, I mean, I know I've talked with cooks and, you know, like, well, what got you interested? And one guy that was working for me said, you know, I saw them take these bones and some vegetable trimmings, and 2 days later, I tasted demi, and that was it for him. That's what hooked him on cooking.
Right.
He said, if you can make this out of that, there's got to be something to this craft.
Certainly. But for me, you know, French cooking at this point, there's no arrowroot or roux or cornstarch. Like, in French terms, it's called liaing a sauce. The sauces should just be reduced. So sauce connotates for me like a thickness, but I'm talking more of the juice reduced to a concentrated flavor.
Yes.
So that's, as you're saying, I mean, that's what French cooking to me is. It's like the sum of all its parts far greater than the whole. Like, there's so many little nuances in the dish using the classic French technique, but people don't want that heavy anymore, so it's just adapting. But still, having the foundation of French cooking, for me, is the benchmark of all cuisines.
Yeah, the tech. I mean, there's the, you know, well, they were the first to write it down. The Italians, will say that they taught the French how to cook,
right.
But the French wrote it down. The Italians are that opposite. It's all spontaneity, and with the seasons and what's in the area. So something like herbs. So when you're cooking, do you like fresh or dried herbs, Scott?
Primarily fresh herbs, but there are some recipes that you would use dried herbs. But fresh herbs are always the best way to go, because a lot of the cooking is going to be used right away. So you don't need the dry herbs unless it's going to last longer, where it's a mother sauce or something like that, because the longer you cook a fresh herb, the more it will increase the bitterness of the sauce. So that's right. Why when you make a sauce, yeah, you use large vegetables, mirepoix, which is, you know, carrots, celery, onion, two-part onion to one-in-one. That we do large pieces, because if they were small, the final demi, with your example, would be bitter. So if you're going to use something dried, it's going to last longer on the shelf, in the fridge, or what have you. And if you're going to use fresh, you want to use it right away. And that's kind of the cooking that I'm trained in.
You like to finish with fresh rather than infuse
then
with
add dry. Dried.
Like, yeah, something, I mean, tomato sauce. I mean,
I would use dried. I would use some dried and
sauce
then fresh.
And then finish,
you know,
at the end with,
yeah,
fresh. But the, you know, like that for gravy, but then like a marinara, that's a quicker sauce that you don't need a lot of, actually not a lot of herbs, you just need perfect tomatoes, right?
Right, yeah.
You know, the simple versus the complex with the meat juices and long cooking time and breaking down the tomato.
There's so many different kinds of marinara, too, that, you know, there's no one way of doing it. I like, for instance, when I grew up, the only fresh herb that we used was parsley, but yeah, quite a bit of the others, like we didn't, we used dried sweet basil. We never used oregano, although some people use oregano. We never used garlic, although some people use garlic. We used onion. So it did differ in terms of when you use dry, in our house at least, when you use dry and when you use fresh.
And it's concentrated, right, Pete?
Yeah, dried is always going to be more concentrated in flavor because you don't have the water weight. When you use fresh herbs, you're not only getting the flavor components, the flavor oils, but you're also adding the water for the herb. So that adds to the weight. So the flavor oil ratio to the overall weight is less.
Well, it's like brewing fresh coffee versus freeze-dried.
Well,
you know, you got aromas, you got oils.
I mean, if you were to pop some freeze-dried in your mouth, it would be very, very harsh, but it's sort of the same concept. Yeah. You're just, the dried stuff is just the solids and the flavor oils. The water is gone. In fresh, you're adding the water that is part of the plant.
Okay.
Well, can you rehydrate? What if I just
rehydrate. Some people will do that, like, for instance, onion. You can take dried flake onion, and you can rehydrate that. And some people use it in garlic bread, for example. It's a quick way of not having to chop onion and reconstituting quickly.
My wife likes little minced dried onions because she doesn't like that harshness of a raw onion.
Mm. Yep.
And people use the minced garlic. But I'm just saying, like, say basil. If I took dried basil and rehydrated it,
That wouldn't work as well.
Right, okay.
Flat leaf plants don't rehydrate as easily. So parsley, dried basil, dill, these don't rehydrate. Thyme, they don't rehydrate. Usually it's going to be a root plant. Turmeric, garlic, onion, any kind of root part will rehydrate.
So those you can rehydrate, and you know, again, you're missing some
leaf, any
aroma,
leafy
but you
type.
Still get some flavor.
Won't.
Yeah, I was wondering because sometimes you see, Herbe de Provence, let's say, right? That whole mixture, thyme and rosemary,
tarragon,
summer savory.
You told me lavender, and you said that's
an
American.
American invention.
Yeah.
Yeah. In France, they don't use lavender.
They grow it, but they're not using it in the Herbe de Provence.
They'll use it for other things. Principally in France, they take the lavender and extract lavender oil for the perfume industry.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But not so much for food, although it is, a small fraction is sold for food. We sell French lavender, but the mainstay grown in France is for.
How about edible flowers? Have you used any, Scott? I've never done that. I see them on salads, and
I think it's good for buffets and decoration,
the garnish.
I mean, people use it, and God bless them. I'm sure they do a great job with it. But I call it functional garnishes. I always said that. Like, we're not going to put items that A, have nothing to do with the dish, or B, that are not really edible, that will affect the dish, the food, because like French food to me is different than American French. Like America, we're all about the presentation, not that it's not about the food, but the presentation takes on a much bigger percentage. Where in French food, you go to France, you get served and it looks nice, but then after you eat it, it's like, oh my God, like a beautiful woman that you love that maybe other people don't think is beautiful, but
it's
when you taste it, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, like you, that's why you love them. And that's French cooking. Their focus, over 90%, really.
So
I mean,
more
100%.
Flavor. I mean, you want, it's natural colors and flavor, but no, like the non-functional garnish. Back in the 60s, we had the curly endive and the spiced apple ring, and that went on every plate.
Right.
Because it was red and green, and it's got some colors to it. So.
Or stalks of rosemary on a dish that has
thyme
in it.
That's your skewer that you're cooking with for a reason, it's one thing.
Right.
But just to stick things in the dish, the architectural cuisine.
And that was more in the 80s, right? Late 80s, early
90s. How do you eat the stuff? I mean, if it doesn't make sense, and that's what I tell my cooks, like, make it look like you did it on purpose.
Right.
That's, I don't mind a little creativity, but it's got to look like you did it on purpose. It can't just be thrown on there. So at least take that care.
Right, yeah.
Because food's always different. You're saying, the only thing that, like, layered one time, it was an antipasto first course. And it was done. Used to do it in the tubes there,
mm-hmm.
the pipes. So it's stacked, but it made sense because you're eating each ingredient separately. You're just kind of peeling off layers.
Right.
Where some of the stuff, they stack it, and then do I cut through it or is it meant to be? How did you want me to eat this?
Right, right.
And you guess gets confused.
Yeah, no, that's true.
So simplicity is much better.
And you see in some of these restaurants, these upper-end restaurants, you'll go and read a menu and there's so many ingredients, but more eclectic, like cardoons or crones or turmeric root. It sounds great, but it might not have anything to do with being great, and that trend is starting to diminish.
Oh, the longest, You know what? I would say that, the more stuff you put in the description, the more people can say, oh, can you leave that out? I've never tasted it, but, I don't like that. Can you make it without that? No.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, too.
Can't take the chocolate out of the mole, right?
Right, right.
It's already in there.
Can't take the chocolate out of the soup.
You have a braised beef and Guinness. Can I get the beef medium rare?
So no. You're saying the less they know, the better?
Well, but the other side of that now is with allergens, which I never thought, and you probably never did in your career, that stuff that we eat now is considered allergens.
Right.
And, I mean, there's, a lot of issues out there. And I think it's, a part of evolution and how we're evolving our food probably faster than our bodies are keeping up with it. That's my thought on it anyway. We're developing foodstuffs with, we know genetic modification and DNA and that whole thing. And we're speeding up evolution, and our bodies haven't caught up yet.
Right.
Like the wheat's higher protein now than it was. Maybe that's why there's more, because that's what you're sensitive to, right? The gluten.
Right.
But you have to watch allergies. So I list anything that's primary ingredient, but also that may be a sensitivity or an allergy. Like you always want to tell people there's garlic and something.
Right.
You know, nuts, things like that. That really, I mean, there's serious problems for people that can't have them, so they have to know. But, you know, sometimes it's not even a big flavor component, but it's in there. And it doesn't really, it's not going to change the world if you leave it out. But servers have to know. I mean, it's not just, you can't keep these recipes in your head anymore. You have to have everything out there. That's what's changed also.
And I think, you know, I believe you'll see in the future different restaurants popping up that are really, you know, high end, that totally cater to vegans and people that are non-gluten. Like gluten products have really come full circle. I mean, five years ago, I don't think the products they were selling was great, but again, it's their learning curve. But as it evolves, gluten-free bread and what have you, it's getting better and better.
Well, and I think, you know, if you look to cultures that didn't naturally have wheat in their diet, we talked this about the spices, like they're used, you know, you eat what you grow, and what grows together goes together, right? Like the wines go with the food. Well, that grape grows there naturally, so that's going to go best with the food. But you'd have, you know, rice, corn, I mean, it's hard to do pastries. But there is still a way to get structure in things. I think eggs are harder to leave out than wheat flour. You can always find, you know, pasta. I mean, you say the products now are great.
Yeah.
Using the different flours and grains.
Yeah. Rice.
But, if you take eggs out of things, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
How do you bake without an egg, right? So, yeah, you're right. I think we see vegetarian, you know, vegan, a very, very small percentage of the market. But you need to have, we need to be aware of that having things available. It could be a veto, we used to call a veto vote in the business. So you got eight people going out and one person can't eat anything on the menu. Well, we're going to go, you know, you got to accommodate that person.
Right.
So, and we can't make them feel like, it's a chore to do it.
Oh, we're doing them a favor,
Yeah, it's, you know, like, you're a vegan. Well, you can have the house salad or something.
Right.
that's not right.
Yeah,
You know,
true.
Back to hospitality.
Right.
Danny Meyer, you know, hug the customer. And that's what really, you know, our vehicle is food and beverage, but it's really about taking care of somebody.
Right.
Serving Sounds them. Like things got tougher over the past 10, 15 years. Sounds like there's a lot more you have to worry about.
You know, when having the restaurant, the four-star restaurant, as people would come in and give us, you know, these requirements, I would get nervous. I mean, I wasn't an authority on it. So it was all about researching and, you know, not making it a chore, like really trying to exceed their expectations.
It's a challenge.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
But
a
instead
challenge.
Of looking and throwing your hands and like, no, I can't do that.
Right.
You know, back in the recession, the mid-2000s even, our mantra, like, we did not say no.
Right.
I mean, I might not be, because I used to wonder, like, a place like Charlie Trotter's or some of those, you know, high-end places. And even one time they said, you know, people come in there and they're spending $300 on a dinner, but I want a shrimp cocktail. And he said, you know, we don't really have that, but I know what the person wants. He wants some pulled shrimp and he wants some kind of spicy red sauce with it. And you're paying $300, he's, you're not going to say no.
Right.
The people have money, but, you know, they have maybe a simple taste. Or like, this is what I really want, and you make it work.
Right.
You know, you figure out, all right, what are you looking for? I'll give you something that's going to satisfy you.
And if someone comes in, this would always surprise me. You know, they would come in and ask for let's say they asked for salmon, and the chef would say, well, I only cook it medium rare no matter what. I mean, that would offend a lot of guests. But, I mean, if you want it well done, absolutely.
Oh,
my
yeah.
My mom's from Ireland. Everything was well done in my house.
Yeah. Well, I saw
the sauces were great.
Years ago on a steakhouse menu, not responsible for steaks ordered medium well to well. So what do you mean you're not responsible?
Right.
You're putting it on the plate. I thought that was strange. That's like right away you're putting up a no.
Yeah.
And my owner says, like, all these conditions and rules, like, you know, you can't start off the occasion with a bunch of no's.
Right.
Well, we can't do this, we can't do this, we can't do that. Like, well, what can you do?
Yeah, it's true.
So, but, yeah, you're right. And food now, I mean, it's still, I always say doctors get paid a lot to fix what is in people's bodies, but we put stuff in people's bodies.
Right.
I mean, I think there's more pressure on us. More responsibility.
Yeah.
Because that's some stuff to get there. We've got a break for a couple of messages here. We'll be back at the table with Scott and Pete.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Back at the table here with Pete and Scott. Yeah, just trying to figure out, we're going to ask Scott what some of the, I guess, dishes you like to cook. Was that a signature dish? Do you have a favorite that over the years is, or what do you cook for Scott's night off? What does he cook?
I'm never cooking at home.
No,
never.
That's why we're doing so much.
You never bring work home with you.
Well, that's a good reason. I never thought. You always...
I have a nice kitchen, but I don't want to mess it up. That's my excuse.
That's right.
Whether it's nice or not, I don't know. Like, but you know, I was thinking about that, and like dishes at Le Petit Chateau were like the foie gras with the caramelized pears. Or the duck confit, or for dessert, the grand marnier souffle. Now, is that something that initially I just wanted to cook? As I continued to cook it and try to refine it, and where people were so happy to come back for it, I fell in love with it. You know, so every time I made it, like, I guess my point is, whatever you consistently make for somebody who wants to come back and have it is mm-hmm. something that I love to do. You know, and the general answer is whatever's in season, really trying to nurture that product to be the best that it can be. But like basic things, like at home, like I love Rice Krispie treats, as crazy as that sounds.
Everybody's got that little guilty pleasure.
And I love brown butter, like they call it beurre noisette in French
cooking. Yeah, so you put a little tweak to it.
I like that. Well, I love brown butter, and my mom's from Ireland, so we have a lot of butter.
Sure.
Always had a lot of butter. That's why I'll never get this off. But, you know. Yeah, just, I guess, whatever you have a hankering for. Like pizza, I don't know how to make great pizza, so I'd love to go somewhere where I know they make it great.
Okay.
I can point you to a few places.
Oh, is that right? I don't know of any in New Jersey, because every time my wife and I on a Sunday or a Monday would want to go somewhere to try it, they're not in these areas. They're like in Trenton and Newark. And
well, they're more, yeah, they're just city areas. I mean, you know, there's a few of them around Flemington.
There's a couple. There's a one that I really like going to in Lebanon.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So they make really good pizza.
No bad pizzas. Some are just better than others, right?
Yeah, that's true.
What about you, Pete? With you now, I mean, you're the herb and spice business is kind of a second career for you, right?
Yep. Yeah. I retired as a chemist, and I have been building a business with my wife, and we found that one of the few things that Hunterdon lacks is a source for different types of dried herbs and spices,
and even exotic.
Yeah. You know, that if you want to buy something unusual, like, I don't know, Sichuan peppercorn, people say, well, you got to go to an Asian market, this and that. Well, we have it available and ready for delivery to any restaurant here that wants it. So, you know, we're trying to provide a service to other businesses, not only just restaurants, but to manufacturers. Like, for instance, there's an upsurge in the past 20 years of people who like to make their own hot sauces or their own pickles.
Oh, yeah, cottage industries.
Yeah.
Do you ever think of that, Scott? Do you have, like, signature things you sell at the market there? Like a sauce or a dressing?
You know, different tomato sauces with pork and sausage in it. I haven't done it as of late, but that's something that we're certainly going to get more involved with, food to go. And Pete had a great idea to maybe start it one or two nights a week. But back to Pete, like, his herbs are not the average herbs that we grew up with. You know, McCormick, and you look in your herb counter, you know, closet, and, oh, do I need this? That's what the recipe says. You know, as you get more knowledgeable about using herbs and know the difference between, you know, your run-of-the-mill or, you know, a good product you can get at even Whole Foods, it doesn't compare to the products that Pete and his wife carry. So that's something that you definitely want to kind of at least compare when you're doing a recipe, because, you know, you have to start off with great products and mutually exclusive. You have to know how to nurture them. And mutually exclusive, you have to have a product, final product that tastes great, where you're very proud to serve it regardless of who you're serving it to. And having the right ingredients makes all the difference. So having, like, great herbs dried compared to what we grew up with is night and day. And
we were talking about the fresh herbs versus the dried. And I had asked Pete, like, what if you just dry out your own herbs? The dehydrators now are becoming, even in the home use. And Pete, you were explaining what maybe some of the pitfalls. We were talking about organic food.
There's a big drive for organic food these days, and there's a lot of organic farms in the area. And there are certain requirements. I'm not familiar with all the requirements, but certain showcased requirements, for example, they don't use pesticides.
Right.
So they expect a certain amount of the crop to be destroyed to insects. So therefore, they have to counterbalance that cost by increasing the price of organics versus the stuff where you get 99% of the crop because you're killing all the bugs. But there's a negative side to that, just as bad in the organic side. Like, for instance, you have to wash your vegetables if you're going to buy regular vegetables because there's pesticides on them.
Yeah, I think people think because it's organic that you don't have to
wash it, but that's not true. Matter of fact, if you think about it, for example, if there are bugs in the crops and you're going to lose a certain amount of the crop to the bugs, well, what animals eat bugs? Birds. So you'll find birds in the crops, and those birds don't use, you know, when they go, they just go where they are.
Right, right.
So you can get a certain amount of fecal coliform on the crops, and even though the rain might wash away the obvious toilet-looking bird do, it still, the coliform's on the crop, on the leaf, on the parsley, or wherever it's on. So you have to still wash it to get rid of that coliform.
Wow. Yeah, so somebody drying their own. I mean,
you need to wash it.
Sources are all...
When we buy, what we do is we get from importers, And what we do is we will buy things that are FDA, they're overseen by FDA in terms of cleaning. So either they are steam cleaned to get rid of all the microbes that might come overseas, or there's a process called ethoxylation, which is a gas, very low boiling gas that will kill microbes. And then there the other ethoxylation or EO they call it, and the last which scares people is irradiation. You know, they'll run it through and they'll hit it with gamma radiation, and then people are very worried about that. They don't want it irradiated, but the amount of
there's nothing resident in
The amount of mutation, let's say, that might occur is very minimal. Well, what happens is you get fragmentation. So instead of having a whole protein, it might fracture into three pieces. But your body dissolves it into amino acids anyway. So, you know, it's really not as unsafe as people think it is. But
Scared.
Yeah, they get scared.
When microwaves first came out,
you're going to get nuked. Yeah.
So what do you prefer, organic or non-organic?
Well, we will sell. We cater to our clients, and we deal with restaurants, cafeterias, small manufacturers, and for the most part, the driver is cost. So organics are organic products, dried organic products are a lot more than not organic dried products. So we principally sell not organic.
Not organic.
Yeah, only because if you think about it, just think about where we are. How many organic restaurants are there in the area? The only places that might buy from us that are organic are going to be like a Whole Foods. But they have their suppliers already. They're big suppliers. They use Frontier or they use Simply Organic. So there's really not a big call for it. Yeah, and the other problem is that a lot of these herbs and spices you buy, you can't really know if they follow the organic.
I agree. Oh, my gosh.
You can't know.
I mean, look at the olive oil crisis out of Italy. They say over 90% of all imported olive oils in the beautiful bottle have nothing to do with the first or even second press of the U.S.
Honey from India.
Minutes. Yeah.
You got to watch. There's a lot of fake. Well, and that's why you have the what they still keep fighting for, that standard of identity, which we use in this country, but the origin, like the Fontina cheese or the Parmesan, like they want to protect that origin and designate that product because you don't want the cheap knockoffs.
Any company that buys from farmers and then pulls it all together to make their products, it's just very difficult to make sure everybody you're buying from is following the rules.
Right, like a negotiant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well, we're winding down an hour here. I've got to get ready for news. Scott and Pete, thanks very much.
Bill, pleasure. Pete, pleasure.
Yep.
Yes.
Nice seeing
quick
you.
Quick hour, but hopefully
see you at the general store.
Yes. Yep. Gonna go and check you out. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
We're signing off.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
U.S.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
A well-known Republican governor launching a run for U.S. Senate.
Washington's a disaster. It's dysfunctional.
Rick Scott saying at his Monday morning kickoff event in Orlando,
there's a lot of old tired thinking up there. It's not heading in the right direction.
President Trump has publicly urged Scott to seek that U.S. Senate seat currently held by veteran Democratic Senator Bill Nelson. He's expected to face Nelson in November, though he and Nelson will both face primaries first. Another Republican governor discussing the need for National Guard troops to increase border security.
The people coming across the border have increased dramatically, more than 200% month on month in the month of March of what it was the year before.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott telling Fox and Friends the president wants as many as 4,000 troops deployed to the border, and his state alone will likely send half that many. And this is USA Radio News.
Life needs to be enjoyed with family and friends, to laugh and to share. But tragically, addiction to alcohol and drugs can ruin that. So, if drugs and alcohol are a problem in your life or the life of someone you